from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In her mid-20s, writer Anna Wiener moved to San Francisco to work for a data analytics startup, joining what she calls her generation's gold rush. As a feminist, she struggled against Silicon Valley's male-dominated culture, finding herself in what she describes as, quote, a position of ceaseless, professionalized deference to the male ego. Anna Wiener joins us now to share her experiences in the tech startup world and to discuss her new memoir, Uncanny Valley. Welcome, Anna Wiener.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Pleased to have you, and forgive my voice. I'm a bit ragged here with this voice this morning, but let's get into your memoir because in many ways it's a compelling story and a very engaging read, if I may say so, but it follows a trajectory to leaving Brooklyn, heading to San Francisco, and hoping to find purpose and hoping to find, well, I guess what you could call meaning, and there's a disillusionment, really.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that the book is definitely a story of disillusionment. When I first moved out here, I think I was really sold on what seemed to be a promise of momentum and idealism and doing things differently. And I think that I quickly, not quickly enough, but I eventually came to see that the stories that the industry was telling about itself weren't really panning out for me, that actually it wasn't a new and different world, but a sort of aesthetically different version of the same.
So this is one of those curves from idealism to not necessarily cynicism, but certainly a recognition that, you know, there are a lot of things that one doesn't see beyond the myths that are created and the narratives that are created.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's definitely a narrative of disenchantment, the book. I mean, it's also – the book's very ambivalent. It's not a polemic. It's not – obviously, it's not a love letter to Silicon Valley, but – I think that I remain ambivalent, and I wanted it to be emotionally truthful to my experience. And so I think that readers will find that it swings back and forth quite a bit. You know,
ambivalence is a key word, I think, in reading your memoir, particularly ambivalent about what you call the boys. I mean, on the one hand, they seem very confident, young men who are operating things in Silicon Valley, some of them your bosses and so forth. You're drawn to that. You'd like to be that confident, but at the same time, you realize there's an amorality and there's a kind of cruelty and bulliness.
Sure. I mean, I think that some of the things that made Silicon Valley so appealing to me or made working in tech so appealing and exciting are also the same factors that make working in the industry so difficult for some people, which is, you know, this kind of the hubris, the lack of expertise, the ambition, the confidence, the sort of license to go forth and make something happen without oversight or accountability or obviously regulation in most cases. So I think it cuts both ways, right? And I do think ambivalence can be generative, but you know, that the same things that were very seductive also wound up really making it a very challenging experience for me.
Well, there are certainly a number of books that show how challenging it can be, particularly in terms of misogyny and the sexism, and you bring that into your narrative in a very central way. But you also bring in something else that I think needs to be highlighted, and that is the kind of lies that shroud what is behind those lies, which is the truth of a lot of prejudice and a lot of myth-making, which says we believe in diversity and things of that nature, which are just nonsense.
Well, I think the industry is actually very talented at mythology, at narrative, at storytelling, which is interesting as those are skill sets that tend to be undervalued inside of a lot of these companies. But yeah, I mean, I think one of the stories that Silicon Valley has told about itself for a long time is that of meritocracy and the idea that the most talented people will rise to the top and succeed on the basis of their individual merits. It's obviously a very sort of libertarian orientation. I think that, you know, the minute you're inside one of these companies and you see who's running the show and you see the sort of the structural biases, the way that certain people are impeded from succeeding, from advancing, it becomes incredibly clear that this story of meritocracy is actually a sort of a cover for any sort of structural analysis or another way to let external hierarchies kind of infiltrate what is otherwise understood as a utopian, you know, non-hierarchy.
This is more a dystopian version. I mean, no, you're really, I mean, there's a polemic in your work, and the polemic says there's a lot of dehumanization in Silicon Valley, and there's a great deal of empathy deficiency and really intellectual impoverishment. I mean, you're talking about a startup culture for the most part.
Right. And I think that word culture is pretty – there's a comedy to that, that we talk about this as culture. But I think tech culture is generally anti-intellectual, ahistorical, apolitical, or at least it considers itself apolitical. I think this is also reflective of just a sort of capitalism, right? It's not necessarily in these companies' interest to move slowly, to deliberate, to bring on experts and ask for regulation and oversight, to be accountable to anyone other than themselves or their shareholders. So I think that it's not specific to Silicon Valley exactly, but there are certain factors in Silicon Valley that amplify and accelerate these tendencies.
You were there during the unicorn phenomenon, and to some extent we've eclipsed that now. We've sort of moved into a different realm. But the sense then was these CEOs we looked at as great leaders, and that's fallen away to a great extent. I mean, people like Zuckerberg and others who at one point were talked about as presidential candidates and so forth now are, well, they've been tarred, especially because of the last presidential election.
Possibly. I don't know. I mean, I think there's a deep American tradition of conflating wisdom with wealth. And I think that there are a lot of people who look up to business leaders from Silicon Valley, especially because they seem to represent a certain type of irreverence or some promise of the American dream, even though when you really start to look at it, there's a lot of people who had quite a leg up to begin with. There's a lot of privilege in the industry and a lot of people who can afford to take the risk of starting or working for a small company.
It's also a lot of what you describe as downright uselessness.
Can you be more specific?
Well, you talk about a lot of the things that come out of what we're calling startup culture. They don't necessarily have real cultural value in the broader sense of culture or intellectual value.
Well, I think that it is one of the things that startups are good at is circumventing rather than engaging with society or engaging politically. And I think that often when you circumvent, you tend to sort of make a loop, sort of go right back to the form that you might be trying to disrupt, so to speak.
We're talking with Anna Wiener, contributing writer for The New Yorker, and her new memoir is called Uncanny Valley. And let's hear from some of you. We want to hear your thoughts, especially if you worked at a tech startup. You can share your war stories or, for that matter, glory stories. Give us a call now. Our toll-free number is available, 866-733-6786. That number again for your calls is 866-733-6786. We do want to hear from you. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Or email any questions that you might have to forum@kqed.org. What do you want your readers to take away from your book, especially?
Mm. Well, like I said, it's not a polemic. There's not a thesis. It's a personal story. I think there are maybe two main ideas I hope people finish reading the book with. One of them is that I hope people know that this doesn't have to be treated as inevitable, that things can change, that power can shift, that this is still a fairly new industry and none of this is set in stone, although it often can feel that way. And I think the other is probably that sort of related to that, but I think everyone deserves better. I think employees deserve better. I think even people running these companies deserve better. Society obviously deserves much better. And so that's sort of where I place my optimism about the industry, is that there are a lot of very smart people in Silicon Valley. And I think that at the moment we are suffering from a lack of imagination, a failure of imagination. But I do think that things can change. And so that's...
What gives you that hope? Because, I mean, I welcome optimism. But at the same time, when you're writing about some pretty serious avariciousness and bullying and all those kinds of things, manipulated oppression, really.
Mm-hmm. Avarice is a great word for it. Yeah, I think that I have to be optimistic as someone who's in their 30s who wants the world to change. I think that I also am seeing some things happening in the industry right now that give me some hope, right? Some of the worker organizing, some of the collective action that's happening. The conversation around regulation is interesting to me, although I am not super excited about anything that I've heard proposed yet, but I think it's quite heartening that people are talking about this. I think that people are articulating their disenchantment, their disillusionment, their frustrations with capitalism and their frustrations with Silicon Valley's sort of acceleration of and capitalization on institutional erosion. I think things are shifting. I mean, whether there will be actual power behind those shifts remains to be seen, but I have to remain optimistic because otherwise what's the point? I
admire your optimism, and we'll hear what our listeners have to say about this, and you can join us toll free 866-733-6786. And let's begin with Kelly. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm in the midst of the book, two-thirds way through. I posted it on my LinkedIn a couple days ago to my LinkedIn connections to read the book. I wanted to just say I love this book. I love your personal story within commenting on tech. You're very courageous talking about, you know, coming from New York and what you're observing. And I wanted just to get your comments on San Francisco as a whole. I do public policy, and I was just curious. I really appreciated some of your larger perspectives about the city. Could you just comment on that a little?
Sure. Thank you so much for reading my book. It's really kind of you to say, to tell me that, and for you to share it with people.
Nice to get that feedback.
Yeah, it's really lovely. Thank you. my feelings about San Francisco in general, I mean, where to begin, right? There's a lot that I love about San Francisco. There's a lot that I think the city is really suffering in a lot of ways, and a lot of people are suffering. And I do think that a lot of the problems that we're seeing in San Francisco now are amplified and accelerated and exacerbated by the influx of wealth and industry, but by no means are rooted in the tech industry itself. I think that these are problems with very deep roots. And I do hope that, I mean, I think we've sort of run up against a conflict with housing where people are sort of pushed into seeing San Francisco as a transient home, you know, a place to live for a year or two and then to bail out. And so my hope is that there will be more civic engagement from people who are moving here to work in the industry. But San Francisco as a whole, I don't know. I mean, I think that the housing crisis is probably the biggest issue confronting the city right now. So many things are tied into that. Is there something in particular that you're focused on that you're sort of hoping to see people talking about more?
I think maybe just your comments on the homelessness coming from New York and, you know, experiencing that years ago in New York and how shocked you were coming from the outside. So that kind of fresh perspective that you bring in your book to some of the social situations, government, including, you know, technology, that I found kind of honest and refreshing because it was from an outsider point of view.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for that call. Good to hear from Anna Wiener is with us. She's a contributing writer for The New Yorker, and her new memoir is called Uncanny Valley, and we'll get another caller on. That's you, Coco. Good morning. You're on the air. Coco, are you there? Or Jay, I'm sorry. Jay is on the air with us. Jay, go. Try.
Hello?
Okay. Let's try Coco again. No, I think that call dropped. I'm sorry to say. We'll try to get more of your calls on here. Something. Is Jay available? Let's see.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Go ahead, Jay.
Good morning.
Morning.
Just wanted to echo your comments on the myth of diversity in the Silicon Valley. Two groups that I've noticed in particular that face discrimination are introverts and religious people. In the Silicon Valley, you're kind of expected to be like this extroverted presenter, but it's just not sincere. It's kind of a facade. It's just a lot of shouting with no substance. And then if you're a religious person, like they'll say, like, okay, we embrace everyone if you're a Muslim. But if you're a devout Muslim, you actually have to pray, you know, after lunchtime, and you don't drink alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't go out with the boys to the bar after work, you know, there might be ramifications for that. So that's what I've noticed in my experience. And then also, where's the best place to buy your book from? And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
All right, thank you for the call.
Thank you. That first comment is super interesting.
About drinking with the boys? Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it ties into the how important the social element is at a lot of these companies, whether that means going out for drinks after work or even having drinks in the office or being outgoing and being able to assert yourself socially, not just with respect to your actual job duties. I think that My sense is that that is probably a bigger problem at smaller startups where your identity and your social life and your work life all sort of fuse. And expressing any desire to be different or to be separate from that or to have your own routines is somewhat frowned upon, as it's kind of – it's like opting out in a way. And this is sort of what I was trying to get at earlier with this idea of meritocracy. When you have an absence of rules, when you have this sort of sense that it's like almost an economic argument that, you know, the market will correct itself and so the, you know, talent will reveal itself, I think that you – all of these other sort of – the rules are replaced by social relationships. And so what you're talking about, I think, ties into that. In terms of where to get my book, you're very you're very generous to ask. I think any bookstore,
most bookstores have.
Yeah, IndieBound can route you to a bookstore close to you. It's also on Amazon.
Getting good reviews from our listeners. Let me read one in a tweet from Nicole. Anna's narrative felt most familiar as I lived through similar treatment during the first internet wave in 1996. She is spot on regarding the value of startup culture and Silicon Valley. It's instructive to high school career counseling, too. And a listener writes, in my experience, Silicon Valley is diverse in everything but personality. People who value or need human interaction will find themselves to be outsiders. Mm. You agree with that observation?
I don't know. I
from your experience.
Sorry. The observation is that people who need human interaction will feel like an outsider.
Sweet.
That's so interesting. That's so counter to what Jay just said on the air. Yeah, I suppose it depends on the company. I think it depends on company values. And certainly there is a – I think insularity is a issue at a lot of startups. You know, this feeling that the startup is your world and it should be and that should be your priority. But I've always found the workplaces I was in were very social, and that was good and bad.
And here's another caller. I think we have Coco now. Coco, you're on.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. So I'm Coco Brown. I am a Silicon Valley female CEO and run a company that is a digital platform for top executive women. And I believe that change happens from the top. And if you look at the way women participate in leadership, we receive only 2% of venture funding. We're only 7% of private company boards. You know, we're only at best 20% of C-suite executives. So I'm interested in your thoughts. I obviously have a lot of thoughts of my own around how to change that, but I'm interested in your thoughts on how that's changing.
You want to take that up, Anna Weiner, your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think representation is obviously very important, right? We have an industry with a lot of power and a lot of influence and reach that is building tools ostensibly for global markets that, you know, is a fairly homogenous group of people. And so the people building the products don't necessarily understand the lives or experiences of the people using the products. And so I think that a more diverse industry is obviously movement in the right direction. I would say, and I agree with you that the culture comes from the top or you know, a company is sort of a reflection often of the founder's values or founder's personalities sometimes in a certain way. But I sort of want to push back on that because I think a lot of the problems of the industry have to do with the business model and the structural incentives and the structural position that a lot of leaders and companies find themselves in, where there's this emphasis on speed and growth and a sort of orientation toward monopoly. And I mean, that's sort of the idea behind disruption, right? And I think that the products themselves and the culture of the industry has as much to do with those values as with who's in leadership. So I think that in a certain way, these incentives are also constraints.
And I thank Coco for the call and go right to another caller. That's you, Chris. Good morning.
Hey, I just want to say, you know, thank you for writing the book, and you know, thank you, Mr. Crafty, for doing what you do. Being a brown person and Latino in tech has been tough. I've been a part of, you know, 3 startups, and a number of them have worked out of places like WeWork. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make a comment about walking into those spaces and you know, the few times that it's happened, you know, seeing another person of color or another woman there or a woman there, and just a look and a nod was always all I needed for them to, you know, recognize me and see me in the space and see each other in a space. And I just want to encourage everyone that's like me and like you in this space to, when you see someone like yourself, continue to give that nod and represent each other and be excited for each other for being able to be doing what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. I thank you for that call. There's often a kind of, I don't know if this is a myth or not, how do you see it? There's this notion that a lot of the leaders in Silicon Valley are somewhere on the spectrum of Asperger's or autism. I don't know if that's false or that needs to be challenged, because in many ways it's a generalization, facile generalization. What are your thoughts? You hear it a lot.
I actually haven't encountered that much, that theory. I don't really feel that I can speak to that. I don't know.
I'm not asking for diagnoses, but
I don't want to psychologize people or, you know, flagrantly diagnose people I've never met. But I do think, I suppose there are certain people who are rewarded in this industry and who are successful in this industry, and they tend to be to move quickly, to sort of speak in a way that seems hyper-rational or sort of like address social concerns with a kind of logical economic mindset.
Listening to Forum, and we're talking with Anna Wiener, and her book is out. It's called Uncanny Valley. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And let's go to another caller, and that's you, Phil. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. So I'm 58 and, was there when the internet was being created and, you know, at UCLA, node number one. What I'm kind of getting at is, you know, it all started with netiquette and social responsibility. And, you know, what's happened is that narcissistic venture capitalists who say, you know, you have to make five times my investment in 5 years or we shut you down. You know, there's a lack of an ongoing business concern. So the prejudice that's being seen against women and black, you know, people in the industry. I mean, these guys are difficult for anybody. You could be a white, blue-eyed guy, and they're just narcissistic, crazy people. And, you know, this lack of social awareness, you know, with Facebook, you know, and all the election stuff, they can do it. They can fix all this, but they're not. The second problem is shareholders. So I don't know how this can – I don't think this can be fixed until we structurally fix it and get, you know, honest engineers in there seeking to do public good.
That goes against your idealism and your optimism. Anna Wiener, you want to comment? And by the way, those of you who want to weigh in on this, I invite you to do so. You can join us. And the toll-free number is 866-733-6786. Anna Wiener?
Yeah, I think I would probably want to disentangle structural racism from founders having their company shut down. I just think these are two different conversations, and obviously racism and capitalism are deeply intertwined, but I don't quite think that's what we're getting at here. I think that in terms of having people working in the public good, I completely agree. I mean, I think that we have seen sort of a brain drain situation in a lot of ways in the industry. This is kind of what I was getting at before. The industry has benefited from a certain amount of institutional erosion, if not collapse. And I think that there are a lot of people working in tech right now who would otherwise be working in public service or, you know, working for the public good in some way. But I think that this is a social problem. It's much bigger than any one industry.
I'll read a comment from a listener named Jeff and get your response. Just as Anna is a thoughtful writer with important insight to this new American economy. But is male bashing now the way to sell books? Is this really about male ego, or is this about human avarice and hubris?
I don't think that my book is male bashing. My book is basically a book about men. So I think that...
It's ambivalence, the way you
said. Yeah, yeah. There's a real distance between ambivalence and bashing. Yeah, I mean, I think that
there's a lot of toxicity, though. There really is, as you presented.
Yeah, well, sexism is a big part of the book, but sexism was a big part of my experience. And so that's just sort of documenting my life. But I think that certainly avarice, hubris, greed, ambition, these are this that is the story of Silicon Valley. And idealism too, right? Optimism and but I would say that
I like your optimism. Cherish it.
I'm just trying to live. I would say that that is hard to disentangle from American society's exaltation of young white men. And so it's not bashing. I think it's just observing who is rewarded in this society and to what ends and to whose detriment.
Recognition of privilege.
Sure. That's one way to put it.
There's another caller. Kara, you're on. Morning.
Hey, hi. I hope you guys can hear me. I'm in my car, but I survived both of the booms, and I want to say that as an older person who presents about 20 years younger, thank goodness for genes, I would love for you to keep your optimism. So please don't lose that. but I do see across the board in any career, there's going to be a lot of racism, sexism, et cetera, et cetera. That's everywhere. What I've seen that's different about the tech industry here, quite frankly, is the ageism, mm-hmm. right? Because it's such a young industry. And, you know, there's a lot to be learned from everybody, including the elders. And so just kind of please keep that in mind, because I do see that across the board in this industry.
It's an important point, Kara. And actually, we've covered it on forum. And there's a lot of statistics that point to. You want to say something about ageism and your experience?
I think that's absolutely right. And I think that, I don't know, one of my theories about that is that because this is an industry where technical skills and technical knowledge are valued above all, because technology moves very quickly and because there's always something new, my guess is that there's a sort of preference for younger people because there's an assumption that youthfulness is correlated with proximity to the cutting edge, whereas I am personally inclined to be more interested in expertise and experience. But I think ageism is a huge issue in the industry, absolutely.
Were you really pointing and clicking before you could read?
I was.
Good to have you with us, and indeed.
Thank you for having me.
Keep that optimism. Anna Wiener, contributing writer for The New Yorker, her new memoir is Uncanny Valley. And when we return, David Talbot will be joining us to talk about his new book. He survived a stroke and really in many ways created a whole different life as a result. Former editor of Salon joins us in studio. That's next. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.